For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. The voting is over. The counting continues. And also continuing is our national and our local debrief of Election Day 2020. For our debrief exercise today, I welcome Connecticut Mayor Capital Bureau Chief Mark Pasniokas to the program. You can check out his post-election analysis of yesterday's General Assembly races in today's Mirror. Paz, what are your biggest takeaways from state races?
Well, we see a continuation of what really began in 2018 when there was a really strong reaction to the election of President Trump in 2016. You saw a lot of new Democratic activists in suburban districts that traditionally had been very friendly to Republicans. We saw Democrats doing better in some of the more affluent, better educated districts and losing ground in blue collar districts where Democrats traditionally had been pretty strong.
You know, in your article, you mentioned yesterday's races were a win for suburban women. Am I paraphrasing that correctly?
Absolutely. It was really a good night for suburban Democratic women, many of whom really became activists after the president's election in 2016. Some of them ran in 2018 and lost while coming close. And there were a number of those folks who really got over the top this year. You see that in Fairfield County, in places like Richfield, Connecticut, in places like, Norwalk and New Canaan, and on the shoreline between New Haven and really the river. These, again, tend to be more well-to-do districts where the president did not do well and Democratic candidates for legislature did.
Your article quoted the man who would be House, who now would be, who will be the House Speaker, Matt Ritter, saying he thinks Dems have gone from a 90-61 lead in the House to 98-53, possibly even 100-51 advantage in the House. Now, combine that with a gain of one or two in the Senate. What's that say about Connecticut and what it's going to mean to the legislation that's going to get passed with that supermajority?
Well, they're trying to sort that out today. Some of the people who were elected to bolster the Democratic numbers are socially progressive. We'll see how progressive they are when it comes to tax policy. And Matt Ritter on Wednesday is trying to get his troops to sort of calm down for a little bit and see what the budget's going to look like. But there is certainly speculation that there'll be a push to take another crack at legalizing recreational marijuana. I would not expect tolls to come back. Governor Lamont made pretty clear that he has no interest in pushing that in the next session. He seemed to have learned a very difficult political lesson in 2019 when the issue of tolls really derailed his first year in office. There will be some financial pressures to do something for transportation funding because the special transportation fund, which relies on gasoline tax revenues, is in trouble. The pandemic means that there aren't as many people driving long distances to work, and gas prices are pretty low. So there's going to be some pressure to do something there. But again, the governor has no stomach to take another look at tolls anytime soon.
Tell me, what was your big surprise from last night?
I guess the biggest surprise would be in the Senate that Alex Kasser, the Democrat who won a Republican seat 2 years ago, that she appeared to hang on. Most of the folks I talked to thought she had had a very bumpy first 2 years in office. She went through a very messy divorce that was very public down in Greenwich. It looks like the strong Biden vote in Greenwich and the rest of that district helped her out. The rest of it was, I didn't see too many surprises. There was a potential for more Democratic pickups in the Senate. There were a number of Republicans who had won close races 2 years ago. Some of them were facing rematches, but right now it looks like they were able to limit the damage. Now there's still some counting, and most of the counting that's going on now is absentee ballots that were dropped off during Election Day in those secure drop boxes or arrived in the mail on Election Day. And so there are still some races where a few hundred absentee ballot votes could potentially change one or two results. But right now, things look pretty solid that it's going to be 98-53 in the House and 24-12 in the Senate.
Given the rhetoric coming from the White House this year, putting the seed out there of potential legal challenges to the outcomes and calling for recounts and all of that, do you foresee any more likelihood of local races heading that way for legal disputes and recounts?
Right now, no. Connecticut has pretty strict standards for when recounts happen. And right now, I don't see races that are falling within those margins. Again, things could certainly change as they finish counting the last absentee ballot in all those districts. But right now there's no recount that anybody's called for, and there does not appear to be cause for any litigation challenging anything that happened here on Election Day.
You know, the police unions came out strongly in favor of a number of Republican candidates, mostly on the basis of those candidates' rejection of the police accountability measure. What does the strong Democratic performance statewide say about the police union's stance and the reaction to it?
It's pretty clear that that issue really was secondary to the Democrats being mobilized by opposition to the president. The only district that it seemed to be a factor is there was a House race in Stonington, in North Stonington, where there's a police officer who beat a freshman Democrat. But in addition to being a police officer who used her vote in favor of the police accountability bill, he also, was a pretty well-liked sports coach in town. And it's hard to, it's hard to unravel, what actually drives people in some of those close races. But generally speaking, there was certainly no evidence that the police accountability issue moved tons of voters, just as it looks like tolls, which seemed to be so dominant a year ago. That seems to be yesterday's news as far as the Connecticut voters were concerned.
The House races, the races for the U.S. House of Representatives, did they play out pretty much exactly the way you thought of, both in I'm sure they did in terms of outcome, but in terms of margin, did they play out the way you thought they would?
Yes. I mean, Rosa DeLauro had her closest race since she was first elected in 1990. Ms. Stryker spent a lot of her own money. It was a very negative race. And DeLauro had, it looks like it's going to be her smallest winning margin. But a win is a win. DeLauro also seemed to pay a little bit of a price for the cancel culture controversy over Christopher Columbus.
Sure.
There was a statue of Christopher Columbus that came down in Worcester Square where, Rosa DeLauro grew up. That didn't help her with Italian voters in New Haven, but she still won by a fairly comfortable margin. Republicans had hope that the money Stryker spent would sort of spill over and maybe help some down ballot candidates such as State Senator George Logan, who was in a very close race and ultimately lost to George Cabrera over in it's a district that's a couple of New Haven suburbs as well as parts of the Naugatuck Valley. But the rest of it seemed to go as expected. The Republicans in Connecticut have not competed in federal races here since, really 2006. And that trend seems to be continuing. We have two political trends here in Connecticut, one on state legislative races. Despite what happened this year, the General Assembly is a more of a competitive territory for Republicans. But in federal races, you know, something major is going to have to change for the Republicans to be able to compete.
Mark Pazniokas of the Connecticut Mirror, thank you so much for weighing in.
My pleasure.